The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 474, recorded on August 6th, 2017. Welcome to the 474th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 307th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry along with a gaming flashback and a gaming history. Now, I don't think we did a gaming history since we talked about the Capcom 5. And for those of you who don't remember, the Capcom 5 were a bunch of games that Capcom initially promised will be Nintendo exclusive. Then they said only one would be exclusive, and that was Resident Evil 4, which turned out to be one of the biggest lies in the history of video gaming, since they even had a version for the Zeebo. I don't know if you know what the Zeebo was, but the Zeebo was a console from 2012 to 2015 that was only in South America and Mexico.
That's excellent.
Yeah, so, but before we do that, we have a gaming flashback, and since we're running through some of the 2007 games, we're doing Crysis. Crysis is a first-person shooter video game series developed by German developer Crytek and published by Electronic Arts, released on November 13, 2007. In the game, players played characters who used nanosuits, advanced-powered exoskeletons developed by the military that granted them special abilities. For example, maximum armor, enhanced suit's ability to withstand bullet and shrapnel impacts, maximum strength, increased the wearer's physical strength to the point where he could punch cars through the air, and maximum speed allowed the wearer to run and act extremely fast. But I think the power that everybody used who ever played the game was the cloak, which allowed them to turn invisible. At the time Crysis was released and years thereafter, it has been praised for its milestones in graphical design, the highest settings and resolutions requiring processing power from computers that was unfeasible when it was first released. In its time, the game was so demanding on computer hardware that the catchphrase, "Yeah, but can it run Crysis?" was frequently added to graphic card reviews. Were you PC gaming at the time Crysis came out, TJ?
No, I couldn't run a bit. I couldn't run a rig good enough for Crysis at the time. It was one of those things where it was like that was the separation between like the serious PC gamers and the ones that were just kind of in there and out of there.
I've never heard of Crysis until now.
Really?
Really?
But the Crytek engine is used for a lot of games that you probably play. Even if they don't really need
it. No, it doesn't sound like it.
I will say this, when you were playing Crysis, the tank was the biggest most frustrating thing in the game. Just a single tank. Rolling around, since it was half-based in thing. But one of the best things was it had that Far Cry sort of dicking with the AI, in which you turn invisible, do stuff, then run away and watch the AI say, "Who did that?"
Yeah, and I mean, this was like the second time Crytek had done this too, because Far Cry, the original Far Cry, was the same way. It had introduced water physics just like so ridiculously ahead of their time that you had to have when the first Far Cry came out, you had to have a system that could run it, and it was quite a demanding thing.
Yeah, but Crysis took it up to 11. That game was future proofed, basically. I mean, 5 years later, yeah, you could run Crysis. But, you know, to run Crysis on max, it was impossible. You'd need a $10,000 computer to do that. Now yeah. You're able to, sort of, kind of. I mean, there are games that have surpassed it, but it still holds up in terms of graphics. The gameplay is fine, too. And Crysis was followed by endless sequels. Crysis 1, Crysis 2, Crysis 3, I think, came out. There was a Crysis that didn't have a number. That was the last one. And when Crysis came to consoles, people threw a holy fit. By then, the Crysis engine had been so that you could have some incredible effects without requiring a massive computer. They'd refined it so that they'd had so many tricks, so many bump mapping tricks, so many lighting tricks, you know, that gave maximum results while not having to tax as much power.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is that, you know, Crytek is basically in a limbo right now. I mean, I think all they're doing is lending out their engine these days.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they – didn't they close Crytek Budapest a little while ago?
I don't remember. Probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
I feel like there was a big closing on Crytek's end.
The thing is that they were the Eastern European developer of choice until CD Projekt Red came and stole their thunder.
I mean, CD Projekt Red can't really... I mean, after doing Witcher 3, they can do kind of whatever they feel like doing.
And what they're doing is Cyberpunk, and Lord knows when that is going to come out.
Yeah.
It is coming out. I mean, they've thrown all their resources behind, and it's supposed to be 3 times bigger than The Witcher 3, so we'll see. It's going to be a hard act to follow. But for some reason, you know, it's sort of game that I would think that Crytek would do if they did RPGs.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to what have you been playing. And go ahead, Scott.
I've been playing a lot of little things, a little bit of Minecraft, a little bit of Torchlight, a little bit of Skyrim. Just, you know, not a whole lot of it.
Have you been playing Civ 6? Because they had that new faction come out. Ethiopia, no?
No, Ethiopia was the previous
Australia, Civ 5. Then?
It was Nubia.
Nubia.
Right. That's the latest one that came out, and it's considered to be an OP civilization.
I haven't played as them yet.
Heavy production. I haven't played it, but I'll probably, you know, check it out and hope my computer doesn't crash this time.
I hadn't been playing Civ 6 at all for a while, but I have the, the season pass that came with getting the $100 version.
Yeah.
So I came back and the Australians. I didn't know which one came out when. So I saw the Australians. I saw the Nubians. I think another... what's it called? Civilization. I forgot the name of it. So, yeah, I was like, there's some new civs that I'm going to try out. There's one. I forgot which one it is. I think it's Congo. I think it's for the original. But the fact that they don't have – they can't get a religion. They just go with whatever religion is in their city. Say, fine, whatever.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I guess they wanted to try something different, kind of like with Venice. Venice was – different in the way it's played, and in Congo they don't get a religious state, or you know, they don't found a religion, so it's like it makes it a little bit different if you're trying to do anything religious with them, it would definitely have to be very different.
Well, it does solve that issue of being annoyed when people come and convert your cities. It's like, oh, I don't care. Convert whatever you want, I'm just going to get whatever bonuses you give me.
Yeah, it depends on like what you're going for. The bonuses might not really help you. They just might be more of a hindrance.
Hey, Scott, I have an idea. Leave your microphone on and don't say anything for like, and I'll let you know when to stop, okay? Okay, stop. Because okay. If I take a sound tone, I can isolate it and have it removed from the thing where they remove noise.
Alright.
Anyway, TJ, what have you been playing?
So I've been going through a few different things this last week. I started with Fortnite.
There's a bit of a controversy with that one.
What is the controversy?
Well, here's the thing. They're selling it on the store shelves for $60. When they say, oh, don't worry, in a couple of months it's going to be free to play.
In a couple of months, I've heard 2018. Like, early 2018,
whatever.
It's still
and it's
2018.
Like they have the $100 version, the $40 version, and it's sort of like people are just looking at this like, so essentially we're paying the early access for a product that's going to be free later on, and you're expecting us to pay for it now.
I have a stance on that, and I do think that they're like, if you're not sold on this game, then there's no reason to buy it. You can wait, and it'll be fine. Otherwise, the most of the editions of it, like besides the standard edition, which I think is just like you get the game and that's about it, they come with a lot of stuff. And it doesn't feel like an early access game from what I've been playing.
The UI is really bad. for one thing. It's one of the worst you'll see. It's like, as Arthur Geese said on Eat Sleep Game, it's one step up from the thing that it, you know, the amateur thing that it comes with when you're doing the Unreal Editor. You know, that's one of the things.
What's wrong with the UI?
You're playing it. You know what's wrong with it.
I don't have any issues with it. I really don't. Like, the home base screen is a little cluttered, but not to the point where I can't ignore half of it and just go about my merry way. It's not, like, keeping me from playing the game. All I'm saying is that it, for what it's worth, it has a lot going on. It has a lot of heroes. There are a lot of weapons. Needs a little bit more mission variety, but...
Again, you're playing an early access game, so you're paying them $60 to help them. Now, you could say the same thing. Well, Minecraft, you spent money, but you spent less money than you would eventually have to pay had you done it with, if you had you paid for it, you know, when it was released. You know, you paid like $10 if you were doing the alpha, or $15 when you were doing the beta. But at least when the game was released, it was like $20 to $30. You know, this, you're spending $60, $100 on a game that's going to be free.
I mean, I think the standard edition is 40.
Yeah, and it comes in. And you have to buy loot crates, right?
No, not really. Not if you don't want to. There's plenty of ways to unlock stuff.
I have less of a problem with this than people have been recently with Shadow of War, which is introducing its own loot crates.
Like I said, I've played a lot of early access games, and there a lot of them didn't have as much polish on them as what I've been seeing in Fortnite. It's a fun thing. I'm enjoying my time with it. The build mechanic is really easy and fun. It's charming. It reminds me of like if Borderlands, Plants vs. Zombies, and Minecraft were wedged into one game. And that sounds unwieldy, but in action, it's pretty easy to lose myself in it for hours on end.
You know, it's interesting that you would bring up that kind of description for a game, because we do have a question of the week that's related to that.
Yeah?
Yeah, cool. And we will talk about it near the end of the show. So, anything else besides
I also got into Gigantic, which has been an interesting experience. It's
a mobile with giants, people.
Yeah, it is a lot like Smite. In fact, it reminds me a lot of what was going on with Smite when Smite first came out. There's not too much in the way of maps.
Did you ever play Demigod?
I did not.
Okay, well, that was the first MOBA before it was even called a MOBA. And it basically had a similar technique in which you it was you, some creeps, and two gigantic creatures whom I think in Gigantic you have to protect, right? Because they fight, but they also can – they get downed by you've been playing it. You go ahead, because here's the thing. I've had Gigantic on my Xbox One since it was announced, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, so the idea behind it is that you've got teams of five, and then you've got a giant creature, and the teams of five need to raise their like a power meter on their creature by going around the map, activating nodes, and then keeping control of them, or taking enemy nodes, or getting enemy kills. And then once your creature has a full power bar, they'll jump across the map and attack the other creature and hold it down for you to attack it for a certain amount of time. And if you do enough damage, it'll take off a bar of health. And the first team to get to knock three bars of health off their enemy wins the match.
So yeah.
And it doesn't have creeps per se. It has these nodes, and you can summon creatures on the nodes and power them up. And it's pretty nifty. There's not, like I said, there's not an enormous amount going on with it right now, but it is very, very early in its actual full release. It has more going on with it than Smite had when I remember playing that right after it had come out. So I'm excited to see where they go with it.
Gigantic was canceled a while ago, if you remember, along with Project Spark. And apparently, you know, they said, you know what, let's not cancel it anyway. And it was uncanceled. A lot of people were looking forward to Gigantic, and then it was, and Microsoft announced they were going to cancel Gigantic, or at least make its existence, you know, sort of nebulous. But it looks like they're moving forward with it. I mean,
yeah, the people who do Star Trek Online stepped in and picked up the publishing rights and moved it forward.
Yeah, but it's still associated with Microsoft. It wasn't like Microsoft gave it away.
And it has Microsoft Play Anywhere on it. I was actually playing on my PC with a few of my friends on Xbox the other night, and it was pretty smooth and easy to set up.
So, as for me, here's the thing. You have the Xbox gold free that are free, and one of them was Slime Rancher. I think it's called Slime Rancher. And that's a game in which, from what I understand, it's been out for a while. Debuted on Xbox One, and in which you pick up and herd and store slimes. You have pink slimes, you have cat slimes, you have rock slimes, and you feed them, and they poop out rocks. And then you can either sell the poop, or you can feed the poop to other slimes to mutate them into different things. But if they eat more than one type of poop, they turn into a tar monster. And the entire game is procedurally generated in terms of behavior. So when you're out in the world, you'll see slimes eating plants or chickens. The only meat that's there, it seems to be, are chickens. And and occasionally you'll have this zombie outbreak of all these tar monsters all of a sudden coming and eating other slimes. And it's actually kind of frightening when you see it happening. And it's all procedurally generated. And one thing I learned is that, you don't want to put the slimes too close to the food, because here's the thing. I put the cat slime pen near my chicken pen, and 10 minutes later I come back. There's this ladder of tabbies going up and out of the pen, and all the chickens were gone because they ate them all. So you have to build tall pens, you have to build ceilings for your pens and all that stuff. And like I said, I got it for free because it's free right now, but it's also on Steam. It's been on Steam since last year. And it is really something, especially if you have an Xbox Live Gold account, you should check out. It's kind of samey after a long while, but then again, it's sort of like in the Stardew Valley mode, in which the game is you dealing with your neighbors, although not as intimately as Stardew Valley. And it's also kind of fun, and the procedural generation of behavior is kind of fun, too. And like I said, I want to slap the cat slimes, because they seem to be the most annoying in terms of behavior. So, I've also been playing Bayonetta, since it's also free on Xbox Live Gold, and I played it when it first came out. I still have the disc, in fact. So I was happy to get this for a free version that didn't require a disc, right? And one of the funniest things, and it happens every so often, I got an achievement on Bayonetta, and it was my first achievement on Bayonetta in over 5 years. And I took a screenshot of it. It's like the previous achievement was June something, 2012, and then an achievement on August 1st, 2017.
Was it a difficult one, or was it one you just skipped across by chance?
It's actually one of the easier ones, in which you kill an angel by stomping on its head. It's something I guess I never did when I first played it. But it was strange. And the other thing is, I played another game. I played Pac-Man 256, and I got an achievement for getting 16 missions, and that was 3 years after I last, or 2 years after I last played it. Or no, 1 year, nice. I'm sorry. So it's sort of like, I was sitting there on 15 missions completed until I came back. And I forgot what a nice little game that Pac-Man 256 is.
Oh, it's super charming.
Yeah. Other than that, what else? Oh, I've also been playing Civ 6, like I just said, because it was since a while since I came back to it, because the game really frustrated me with the Cassus Bellies being, totally, unbalanced. And I found that there are ways now to be able to attack somebody and get no warmonger penalty whatsoever.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there was a declare war, and I clicked on it to see, and it said, warmonger penalty? None. It's like the same game. Huh. Yeah, just go beat up on him. We don't care. And that's all I really want is if someone's screwing with me so much in the game with the AI, I want to be able to beat them with their own teeth because and no one will fault me for it because they had it coming. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item. Go ahead, Scott. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Lexington Video Game Company sues after personal information posted online. From Kentucky Herald Leader. Gun Media, developer of Friday the 13th, the game, filed a lawsuit in federal court alleging that anonymous people violated the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which punishes those who commit computer-related crime. According to the lawsuit on June 29th, Gun Media banned, quote, John Doe 1 from the game for violating the game's code of conduct. The banned user went to 4chan, an internet relay chat, made inflammatory statements against Gun Media, and asked for help to hack Gun Media and personal employee information. On July 8th, John Doe 2, who might be the same person as John Doe 1, made a post on social media website Reddit revealing personal information of Benjamin T. Strauss, assistant producer and community manager at Gun Media. That lawsuit read, that information included phone numbers, addresses, emails, social security numbers of Strauss and his parents. The user also threatened to turn off the utilities at Gun Media or at Strauss' home, the lawsuit states. The user then attacked Gun Media and its employees on Twitter under the handle at Lucifer the God, which has since been suspended. Under the Twitter handle, the user posted financial information about Strauss and his family, the lawsuit states. The next day, Strauss received 5 phone calls after midnight. During the phone calls, John Doe 2 threatened to cause Gun Media and its employees monetary harm. The lawsuit alleges that John Doe 1 and 2 violated the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act by impairing the integrity or the availability of data, programs, systems, and information, and by causing economic damage to Gun Media, including the cost of responding to the attack. In a separate court filing, the court granted a motion by Gun Media to subpoena Reddit and Twitter to find the identities of the John Does. The lawsuit asked for more than $5,000 in economic damages, an injunction on John Doe 1 and 2 to prevent further unlawful conduct, and the return of all data the John Does obtained.
Yeah, that's why I don't like hackers. They don't really seem... They just hurt everyone, and that seems like a really light sentence too, just $5,000 in economic damages.
Well, I think the biggest penalty will be that his real name will be revealed, since a lot of this crap is I want to be anonymous. Well, guess what? If people know who you are, you don't feel so big and hot anymore, do you? Right. And I would like him to be tried as an adult if it's a kid, and I don't care if it's white-collar crime. I'd love to see him see some actual jail time, even if it's just for a month.
I agree. That is a completely unreasonable response to being banned from a game for doing something wrong in the first place. You knew what you were doing when you messed with the game, and you knew what you were doing when you got banned.
Well, he's obviously emotionally unstable. I mean, the reason why he probably violated code of conduct was because of his behavior in the game, and he proved that his behavior in the game isn't a part of what's it called, of internet anonymity, but because he's mentally unstable, he just used internet anonymity as a weapon as well.
And he proved that his behavior in the game isn't just restrained to the game; it's also his real persona. Which it's like that is a completely ridiculous response, like. To go that far to mess with somebody's business all because you got banned from a game for being a dick. No, you deserve it. Anything you get from the court, you deserve it.
And you know what? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if they find this person and what he looks like. I just want to see what he looks like. I'm willing to bet you he looks like every neckbeard that you've ever seen in your life. And you know, the $5,000 he's going to lose, he better off just buying a hooker for a night and relieve the stress.
I mean, I've played League of Legends. I've seen people throw fits and go on rant sprees or go nuts. And I've seen people just lose their minds over losing games, and it's like, dude,
but
there
are
worse things that could happen to you than
not being able
to play one video game.
How do you lose your mind over Friday the 13th, the game? You've played this game. It's 1-on-8, and by the way, that one is probably going to win the game. What, was he pissed off that he lost Jason Voorhees, or was he, or even worse, he was one of the people who were killed by Jason Voorhees and decided, no, I don't want to die as Jason Voorhees at the hands of, I don't know.
Chances are, if he was banned from the game, he was probably doing any one of the things that you can report to gun media, such as spot being, like, there are bannable offenses, such as using unknown known exploits on the map to avoid being killed or killing other campers. Killing other campers on purpose is a thing.
I'm willing to bet you that when they say code of contact, they actually mean code of contact, or he was probably abusive online. In terms of,
there's also teaming up with Jason, basically, if you're a camp counselor and you're in a party with Jason, using what you know to spot other counselors for Jason or assist them and or assist Jason in killing them.
Yeah, I hated that kind of shit in Mafia when people would do that. And they were supposed to be town, but they were helping Mafia, and they were Skype cheating so that they can get a better score. This does sound like somebody that likes to get a chip of power and control, and is obviously using these anonymity and hacking abilities to, you know, to exert their control over these people. You know, the company, it's just not right.
You know, and Friday the 13th isn't even like a competitive game. You're not going to raise up in rank. You're not going to like have a cool ass win loss ratio. You're not helping your KD. You literally get maybe like 500 experience towards some new clothes for one of your camp counselors. And it's like, what did you really accomplish for yourself? You showed that you watched a YouTube video for maybe 10 seconds and that's what you accomplished. Yeah. It's like, it's not like Overwatch where you're getting ahead in any way. It's literally just, let's all kill each other for fun.
You know, one of the punishments that usually happen to hackers is that they get their computer taken away and they're not allowed access to electronic media for a while. Which I think might be a good punishment for this person.
That work?
Yeah. You
know, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. New game combines monster taming meets Stardew Valley. This is from PC Gamer. RE Legend is an adorable multiplayer RPG looking to combine life sims and monster raising. Its Kickstarter campaign is ongoing and at the time of writing has nearly tripled its initial funding target with 20 days remaining. Six-person developer Magnus Games describes RE Legend as a sim JRPG inspired by Harvest Moon Descendants, not unlike Stardew Valley and Slime Rancher. At its core, RE Legend is about taming and raising Magnus monsters, which inhabit the land of Aethia, and making use of their unique abilities. Although it's not clear exactly how many Magnus there will be, we do know every one of them can be befriended, including boss monsters. Some Magnus can also evolve, presumably unlocking more useful powers. A water Magnus, for instance, might be able to quickly water your farmland, which is where the influence of Stardew Valley shines through. RE Legend also features skills like farming, mining, fishing, woodcutting, which level up as you mine ores, and cut logs, and so on. Judging from some GIFs, there may even be skill bosses such as extremely hardy trees and massive fish. Magnus can help with the virtually all life skills, from improving your gathering yields to tending the crops. The game also supports up to 4-person multiplayer and seems to be operate on shared progress servers similar to Terraria's. As you explore different islands and regions, you'll be able to befriend villagers that unlock useful facilities back home. You can romance the locals. Naturally, you may have to fight some Magnus in order to tame them, which is where RE Legend's straightforward combat system comes in. Rather than a declared class, your abilities are decided by your choice of gear and Magnus. Pick up a greatsword and you're a knight. Pick up a staff and you're a mage. You also can have your Magnus tank heal or attack for you. RE Legend was later picked up by Square Enix Collective, the publisher Indie Initiative. Magnet Games then turned to Kickstarter to hopes of expanding the game's scope with such stretch goals as advanced housing customization and orchestral soundtrack, both of which have already been reached. According to RE Legends Collective campaign, it will come to PC in 2018. That does sound like a fun multiplayer game, and I did see a little bit of it advertised on Facebook at one point. It looks like a nice game, and I like that Square Enix is helping to back it and support it too.
So. Well, what it seems to me is that they have the basic game down, and what the Kickstarter campaign is to try and expand its scope. So they have the basic game, and they want to add new stuff, like an orchestral soundtrack, you know?
It sounds like the Pathfinder Kingmaker game, where they had the basic game down, they just wanted to expand it. So that's kind of an interesting way to use Kickstarter.
There's another interesting way, by the way. This guy who did a card game called Rise of Cthulhu, which is basically Lost Cities, but with Cthulhu. It seems like he's using Kickstarter to sell the remainder copies that he didn't sell. It's like, okay, it's fine. It's like using it as a storefront now. By the way, we do have abuse of crowdfunding later in this for gaming history, and the funny thing is that it's a similar game in terms of the indie, you know, you'll see. You know, the thing that I first thought of when I saw the title of the article was, oh, they're going to be talking about Ooblets. How about you, TJ?
It looks fun. I like a good monster tamer, and I like the idea. I can't really think off the top of my head if they've used a monster tamer with like farming elements or anything like that. So that seems interesting, to say the least. I know a lot of Harvest Moon fans that would really love to check that out.
You know, the Pokemon fans, you know, you have all these Pokemon, but they really do nothing for you. All they do is fight, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's the cut and the swim attack, and that's really sort of bare minimum. But we're talking about these Magnus can sort of help you do just about everything that requires skill in the world, and that's intriguing.
Yeah. I'm hoping, since this is a PC game, I hope they keep on coming out with new, quote-unquote, Magnus, a.k.a. Pokemon, as you go along, you know, so you have... And here's the thing, you know, it has four-player multiplayer. When are they going to have a monster ranching MMO? It seems so natural. World of Warcraft does it, sort of, kind of, with your pets. But at some point, someone's going to have to get the idea, hey, guess what? Maybe we should make this into an MMO. Of all the concepts they could have for an MMO, this is one of them that are kind of blindingly obvious that no one's really tackled.
Yeah. And I mean, four player is a good start. Four player seems like it would be fun to fiddle around with. You got a lot of NPCs in this game, too, that it seems like it's going to be interesting to actually explore and interact with.
Scott?
I think I gave my impression on that. It, you know, looked like a good game, and I hope that it does well. I mean, I like the whole farming and getting these creatures to, you know, help you with your farm, and might like automate it a bit. And then apparently there's a romance option as well. And then you add in multiplayer, so that really looks like something to keep an eye on and see if I could play that with some friends.
Speaking of
romance,
what's
going to be interesting?
Well, I just wanted to say, well, speaking of romancing, I hope they have crossbreeding of Magnus like you do in Pokemon to get all new, you know, Magnuses.
What I was going to say is, if there's boss Magnus or Magnus that you have to fight in order to gain, I wonder if there's going to be like a thing. I wonder how they're going to balance, or if there's going to be a thing where you're going to need more than one player to catch one of these Magnus. And then once you finally win that battle, how do you decide who gets it?
See, now you're thinking of Monster Hunter. But I think
those are interesting challenges that I think it would be interesting to see this group tackle that and see how it comes out.
I hope it's done in a community sort of way and not a competitive. I mean, it doesn't sound like this is PvP. This sounds like you're supposed to be working and making. I mean, if you're building a farm, you need a community, you know.
That, and
you
it have says, people to it says shared in. Progress servers, and it says similar to Terraria's, but it seems more like Minecraft to me, in which when you have multiplayer in Minecraft, people just enter your world and do stuff. You know, it's not like.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do it public, then someone might wreck your crap, which you don't want. But, you know, generally, I think it's going to be restricted servers.
Yeah, if it's four-person multiplayer, yeah, it's probably like maybe on a local computer, you know, that somebody hosts it and then three other people join. And then and you just keep it private or whatever. And then you just do your stuff, do whatever you want. And I would hope that as far as, like, the boss magnuses are concerned, that it'd be like a shared thing that you all are in the same farm. You know, somebody's maybe chopping wood, or another person's farming a particular crop or another, and I don't know, you just try to work it out amongst yourselves. That's what I'm hoping. That's what it sounds like.
I agree with TJ. I can just picture people each with their own Magnus going out to capture some major boss Magnus.
Oh, and I definitely think that sounds right. I think there'll probably be some bosses that it's a lot easier to deal with. There's strength in numbers, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Respawn. We're doing more Titanfall. This comes to us from Destructoid. It's no secret that Titanfall 2 faced some tough competition when it was released last October. Respawn Entertainment has been great about delivering free content updates ever since, including a co-op horde mode, which I think we discussed last week. And that has left fans wondering where the studio goes from there. What's next? According to Respawn CEO Vince Zampella, the game was successful, it sold well, but it didn't quite sell as well as it should have. Maybe because it was super crowded, the pricing was aggressive. It was a real tough window to launch our game. But we've got a really great fan base. It's really important for us to keep the franchise going. We're going to do more Titanfall, which is the quote I'm supposed to say. We have our franchise creative director who's in charge of safeguarding the franchise in multiple formats and making sure it continues to grow. There are some other things that we're doing that haven't been announced just yet, but we're heavily invested in the Titanfall universe. As for the future of Titanfall 2, Zampella said, we don't know where and when to stop supporting it. Frontier Defense was obviously something big for us to get out and push for, and our numbers during the launch of FD were more like 5 times the numbers since the initial launch. In terms of player count, it's now starting to stabilize a bit. There's 2 or 3 times as many people playing Frontier Defense right now than all of the other multiplayer modes combined. That's very encouraging for us, and I'd love to see that. You know what this reminds me of? Reminds me of Rainbow Six Siege. Remember, Rainbow Six Siege had a terrible launch, but as the updates kept on coming out and word of mouth started to spread, it started to attract more and more people, so it had late life, like this game did. I mean, yeah, you were there in day one, TJ, and surely you saw that more and more people started to play as it went along.
Yeah, because like Rainbow Six Siege, like the amount of operatives, the amount of maps, it just kept building and building and building in a convenient and a very steady way. And that's kind of what they've been doing with Titanfall 2. If they keep releasing new mechs and new player builds, then I can't really think of anyone who's played Titanfall 2 that wouldn't want to keep seeing that grow, and it'll continue to attract more people as you get more varieties of ways to play the game.
Player campaign too, which I bought Titanfall 2, and it looks like I'm probably going to pick up Titanfall 2 and get it from a store where you can get it for $25 instead of $60, which it still is, or $50. It's either $50 or $60 on the Xbox Live store. I think I'd rather pick up a disc.
And it has one of the more satisfying shooter campaigns out there. That said, I really, really, really hope they're thinking about their timing on this next new content, because if they release it around Destiny 2, I'm going to slap myself in the head thinking, what is wrong with you guys? Did you not learn your lesson the first time?
Oh, there's been some grumblings about Destiny 2 lately.
I grumbled myself about it.
Well, I mean, the fact that they're limiting streaming and all that stuff, that little controversy that's going on.
But, like, Titanfall 2, one of the biggest reasons why Titanfall 2 had such a crap launch is that it literally released in between the weeks of Call of Duty Infinite Warfare and Battlefield 1. Titanfall 2 is great. It's cool. It's nifty. It's got so much going on, but it doesn't have the clout to stand beside games like Destiny and Call of Duty. It's awesome,
but here's the thing.
Not
it was
as
so
famous.
It's so good that the first Titanfall was influential. I mean, now you have Call of Duty Infinite Warfare mimicking its jetpacks and wall running and mechs.
Yeah. I'm just saying that it's good. There's no doubt that Titanfall 2 is the stronger standing shooter of the three. It's just not as famous as the other two is the problem. It doesn't have the international appeal that Battlefield and Call of Duty do, and that's unfortunate for Titanfall. Because if Titanfall 2 – I'm going to say it. If Titanfall 2 had released on its own – in the middle of a dead month when not as many people are releasing games, that thing would have sold like gangbusters and killed it. I guarantee it.
Hmm. Well, you know what? We have a little bonus here. Some news items literally dropped into our laps that is really fresh, hot off the press, and it involves Destiny 2. And I'm going to love to see what your reaction is, TJ. Okay, this is from Bleeding Cool News. Destiny 2 will not offer customization of imported characters. Destiny 2 didn't offer much in form of guarantees, but one of the big items they did promise was you could import your character from the first game into the sequel. It turns out Bungie was telling a half-truth. On Wednesday, the developer published a page about transferring your character, which came with a fact section, a frequently asked questions section. Something many people skipped over and didn't realize until they got into the beta, that was whatever your character looks like from the first game will stay that way in Destiny 2. According to the FAQ, will players be able to edit their migrated characters' customization options in Destiny? The answer is no. There are currently no plans to allow players to edit the customization options of an imported character. The one bit of good news to take from this is if you like your character just the way they are, you probably won't have any issues with this. However, if you wanted to utilize the character customization options that apparently have been greatly expanded on, you don't get the option. The only way to build your character using new traits is to start from scratch. So
hard pass.
What?
Hard pass. I'm going to say it. I don't like too many things about Destiny, but customizing my character is one of the things I really did like. And if you're saying that the only way for me to do that is to start from level one again, I mean, if I was just jumping into it, which I would probably be with Destiny 2 because I didn't play the Fallen King or any of that stuff. I mean, but that really sucks for everybody else who spent all that time on Destiny 1 and played through the Fallen King and played through all the other expansions and played through hours upon hours getting the best weapons, the best gears, the best colors, and then to hear that, hey, you know what? All that stuff doesn't matter.
You know, I want to hear what Jordan Lund has to say, because he's the one who's the big Destiny fanboy who played everything. And the thing is, you know, you get to get your character from the original Destiny, but you don't get the new traits and new armor customization and all that stuff. There has to be something technical about it.
At that point, I would say, well, whatever. I guess I'm just going to start a new character and play Destiny 2 as a brand new game, because if I can't do the new cool stuff with my character in Destiny 2, why would I bother importing my Destiny 1 character?
As a legacy character, maybe, you know, on board with the one I'm leveling up. Let me just, you know, here the question is that I didn't see if a level would come along with it. You know, when you migrate your character, are they that level, or do you have to? You know, let's see. I'm looking on the Bungie character itself. Account and character migration only applies to existing data. Account and character migration will apply to all existing accounts on August 1st, 2017. Any characters created or game progress made after August 1st, 2017 will not be represented. So what you're saying is that if you just create a new character in Destiny now, well, screw it. He's not going to be in Destiny 2 anyway. automatic progress. Players are not required to log into their Destiny accounts on or after August 1st to complete the account. Okay, that's obvious. They're just saying if you haven't played in a while, don't worry about it. Character requirements. For a character's game progression to be recognized in Destiny 2, the character must have reached at least level 20 and must not have been deleted at the time of account and character migration, which means... So that answers my question right there. So when you import him, are they going to be... Wait, if you import him, are they going to be level 1? And if that's the case, why bother? You know? Yeah,
that is what I was going to get down to. So basically, I get to hold on to my Destiny character in their time-encapsulated form in a cryogenic state where they'll never change ever again for an entire new game? No, thank you.
Well, here's the data that is migrated. The character class, race, and gender. Character face, hair, and marking. Character creation date. An assortment of Destiny accomplishments as listed below. So that sounds a lot like when you migrated your account, not your character, but your account, from Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare to Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, you got all the creatures that you'd leveled up in that game, and they're in the new game. I don't know if they had the same – I don't remember if they had the same look. It could be that they started – I think they started as vanilla characters. But they will have Destiny accomplishments for various things you did, like completion of one or more year, you got 1 month of triumph, and all that stuff. So I'm trying to look here to see what level they would start at. Lead characters, legacy characters need to form an account. This is tough to look for. They get their emblems. It doesn't really help me. If they start off at level 1, which I doubt, then I think, yeah, why even bother? I mean, the only reason to migrate your character is if you want to migrate your character 20 plus and be able to do the later content and sort of like a sneak preview of what your main character in Destiny 2 is going to be looking at.
Yeah.
Scott, any thought?
Yeah, that's kind of pointless to say these characters won't get customization. That's the fun of a lot of these games, being able to customize your character and make it your own. And if it's just static and nothing's going to change after that, then I agree with TJ. What's the point then?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're talking about bonuses, like the achievement of being able to say, hey, I'm a year 4, and it's like, okay, that will work for some people. But you know what? It kind of sucks when you're sitting there with your static character and you're collecting all these armor shaders and different kinds of armor pieces, different markings, all the things that basically make Destiny characters kind of fun to play around with.
You know,
if you're collecting all that stuff and you can't do anything with it, that's kind of a kick in the nuts.
I hope that some of the stuff that carries over will just be account stuff. Like, if you make all these accomplishments, at least you get acknowledged for it on your page. You know, oh, you did all this in Destiny. I mean, then who cares what happens to your character? You just make his son or something. Anyways, we're going to move on to the gaming history. And we were talking about ReLegend or RE-Legend. It's on Kickstarter, and it is sort of like a Stardew Valley type of game. Well, we're going to be talking about a game, which is a notorious scam, which basically tried to combine Halo and Minecraft. So, TJ, go ahead, and let's hear the gaming history of Starforge.
Starforge is a video game developed by Codehatch for Microsoft Windows. It is a voxel-based sandbox game that allows for customization of guns and building of bases. It is a game about gathering resources, building bases, crafting, and surviving on an alien planet. Starforge launched an Indiegogo campaign on October 25, 2012, easily making its goal in November. On December 21st, a major update was posted, showing off procedural generation. However, the developers went silent, and no one from the team talked to fans on Indiegogo or the official forums until Starforge was launched on Steam Early Access. The community started to demand better interactions with the developers. They were going to need it with all the new people flooding in. A developer was talked to by some of the moderation team, and someone was picked to represent the community as the community manager, a mod named Juno, who was unofficially named, who was unofficially the leader of the community management, who later revealed all of the behind-the-scenes info on Reddit. After being hired on May 29th, 2013, Juno's role was compromised by the fact that no one from the developer team had ever spoken to her. According to Juno, quote, "The main flaw that came with the job was my lack of communication with the development team. I did not work in the office with the rest of the developers, as I live in the United States, and they resided in Canada. I had the team members on Skype, communication lines were open, though they never seemed to contact me. Throughout the rest of the year until December, I had only talked with the head of the team 6 times over the course of 7 months. I was constantly told I was under NDA, non-disclosure agreements, and not allowed to discuss any features. I pushed and pushed trying to get them to open up to the community more, trying to remind them that they are community funded and that we need to embrace our community for support. My communities were shrugged off," end quote. Her release was frustrating.
No. Say that again. My comments were shrugged off.
My comments were shrugged off. Her release was frustrating as well. Quote, "My contract was due to expire December 31st, 2013. I was informed several times that I was being rehired. I would have a new contract. It never came, and I was cut via an email at 11:33 p.m. on December 31st, 2013. After being led on to believe that I was keeping the job just 2 weeks prior. My cut was not made public. It was clear that it was tried to be done discreetly. The community caught on the next day, asking why I was demoted on all sites. No developer response for multiple days. The thread grew, filling with angry forum members that lashed out over the decision. A response was finally given, stating that it was because they wanted someone in-house. The new person was harassed by the community because of the situation, despite having no part in it. Starforge started to release updates more frequently, which Juno described as tiny, but had very large leaps in version numbers, going from 0.5 to 0.5.5 to 0.7.5, which the team called the beta version. They leapt from 0.8 to 0.9, and on August 12, 2014, the community was told the game is nearing 1.0 and will be released soon. One longtime developer, going by Dan J. Velker, became suspicious of the sudden speed of development and did some investigating, and found that Codehatch had been releasing dev team members at a brisk pace before release. According to Juno, quote, "Including the community manager, 7 of their most experienced employees, some with years of game development experience, were fired. Members with multiple years of experience working at companies like BioWare were gone. This was done in secret, and the community was not informed of this, even though it happened weeks before. All members involved, including Juno, including herself, for posting in support of it, were banned from the Steam Hub. Even though no rules were broken, we expected this, of course. Codehatch has history of removing anything that could affect them negatively. That being said, none of us really expected what happened on the forums. Our accounts were not banned, they were deleted. Now, at first I thought we were banned, but when the realization hit me, it was rough. I was rather distraught that 2.5 years of my life was removed from existence. Though this does not come without consequences. Being the old community manager and having my account erased, they just removed virtually every news, patch log, sticky help post, forum rules, FAQ, etc. from the forums. Between myself and a few other extremely prominent community members, nearly 20,000 posts were removed, most of which date back to the beginning of Starforge's existence and contained a lot of invaluable information about the game. It was stated we were making rumors and speculation and that it was not true. So then why ban nearly 10 people and erase their accounts? It was only rumors, right? It became obvious Codehatch was rushing the game to release regardless of the state of the game itself. When it was launched, it was missing a multitude of promised features. Stretch goals from Indiegogo had not been implemented at all, which were promised in the final version. In 2015, Codehatch flipped all of StarForge's assets into a new game, Reign of Kings. The game was similarly buggy and lacked any sort of support. StarForge was pulled from Steam on January 27th, 2017, and posted DRM-free on the developer's site.
Go ahead, Scott. We know what you want to say.
That's really sad to see, you know, these... God, I really hate reading these stories where, you know, it's a company that it makes crowdfunding look like a bad idea. And
this, well, here's this the thing. Would you rather they... would you rather they, what's it called, just disappear off the face of the map or just release something that was incomplete, like the stomping ground? And by the way, there was an article this week in which a developer just said after they got $660,000 of Kickstarter money, at some point they said, yeah, we're not going to do it anymore. And they started working on a different game.
That's fraud,
you know,
isn't it?
I want a level of openness about it. You know, if you're asking for people to invest in your game, you need to be transparent about what you're doing. That's why I invested in Obsidian in their games, and I backed both of Pillars of Eternity because they're very transparent about their processes and what they're doing, constant updates and showing the steps in their games. And here it just seems like they were very shady from day one and not communicating at all with their, you know, community PR, you know, Juno there. It's terrible when this sort of thing happens. And both examples of them just disappearing or doing this is bad. You know, it just seems like... And weren't we just talking about another...
Yes, I was about to talk about Unsung Story, which was developer Playdeck abandoned that after 3 years. But here's the thing. You see, the thing I have is Playdeck is a really good developer of the some games that I've played. I think they did the iOS version of Lords of Waterdeep.
Problem is they weren't transparent about what's going on. It makes them seem shady when they release a game where all the stuff that was promised doesn't get implemented, and I want to know, why? Why didn't it? What happened?
Yeah,
Where did it go wrong?
Playdeck. I have a lot of games by Playdeck, which are really good. They did Agricola. They did Lords of Waterdeep. They did Twilight Struggle. They did Summoner Wars. They did Flux. They did Ascension, Chronicle of the Godslayer. They do some really good work. But here's the thing: is that they decided in 2013 to do a collaboration with Yasumi Matsuno to do a new Unsung Story. And for whatever reason, they said that due to mismanagement of resources across the company, they had no resources to develop the game. And then went to a different game that someone else hired them for. So here's the thing. Playdeck is a good developer. I mean, they've done some good stuff. It seems like they might have been biting off more than they can chew with a massive JRPG. Yeah. But there is a happy story, potentially. And that is a small developer who also does iOS games called Little Orbit has picked up the slack, and they're doing it, and they're not asking for anybody. They're paying it for themselves. And the reason for that is Little Orbit wants to do the same thing that Team 17 did. You know, Team 17, they made the Worms games, and eventually they became an indie developer and publisher. And I think that's what Little Orbit wants to do, is they want to have this game as a tentpole for their new publishing. So, I mean, there you have a developer who's motivated, Little Orbit, who really wants to get this done, the extent in which they're able to do it. The only problem is that they were a little bit cagey when they were asked about Matsumi, if he was going to be, you know, and they said, no, we have all of the assets and all of his notes, which means they're basically, Matsuno's, And by the way, Unsung Story, for those you don't know, is supposed to be his Matsuno's spiritual successor to Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah, I guess they can't afford to bring him back, because I'm sure the guy he costs a lot of money to have him on the team.
But Playdeck is not a fly-by-night, developer. It's, you know, now it barely it didn't happen with Double Fine, but Double Fine had to resort to doing Steam Early Access to get Broken Age finished, even though they got $2 million. Was it $2 million? Something maybe higher than that to do it when it was back when it was called the Double Fine Adventure. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. A lot of video games isn't programming. It's managing money. And if you don't manage your money, dot, dot, dot. I mean,
That's what I'm saying about Obsidian. They appear to be able to manage their money and manage their resources properly.
Well, when they have control over it, because we know what Obsidian's main problem is that they don't finish their games. All of their games are buggy. Even the crowdfunded ones had some issues, you know? And that's why I think it was Square Enix told them, no. You finish the game. We're not going to release it until you finish it. So, yeah. Like I said, and by the way, there is no legal recourse for what happened with Playdeck and the Kickstarter for Unsung Story. Just so you know. Here's the thing. You're not buying, you're not pre-ordering, you're investing.
Yeah, it even says it on the Kickstarter website. This is not a store. So you're not guaranteed anything. You're investing in something, and you know, you hope that it works and these people are gonna do right by your money, your investment. But yeah, it's a risk. It's a gamble.
When you invest in pork bellies, you know, those pigs may not make it.
Yeah.
So there's a little lesson for people who want to hit the stock market. You know what? If you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get wiped out. And yeah. Doing Kickstarter is basically a little bit like the stock market. You know, do your research first. And even if you do your research, because like I said, Playdeck did some games which I really like. I mean, Lords of Waterdeep is one of the best board game adaptations on iOS. But you have to, you know, they reached too far and, you know, they got burned. Oh, well. Anyway.
I've invested in one Kickstarter, I think, over the entire time that Kickstarter has been a thing. And you probably are going to laugh your ass off when you hear which one it was.
Well, it wasn't Dark Souls the board game, that's for sure.
it was Yooka-Laylee.
Oh, okay. You didn't get burned though. That was you know, they gave us what they promised, you know.
Oh no. I'm just saying, as much as I'm like exhausted and have nothing but and have quite a few bad things to say about it. That was the one Kickstarter I ever put into.
Yeah, I have been a backer. Let's see, how many have I backed? I've backed 76 successful projects.
Wow. I've been very, very careful about backing and been very particular. So I've only backed like 4 or 5, and most of them have already come out. Or, you know, the only ones that haven't is Bard's Tale 4, which is, you know,
That's Brian Fargo. It's going to come. That's Brian Fargo.
Yeah, it's coming. And then there's Hero U, which has been stumbling, but it is coming out. I believe they've had to learn how to do 3D and money management, and I guess it just kind of goes to show they didn't learn their lessons on why Sierra failed in the first place, and so I guess this is kind of evidence of that.
Yeah. So basically, most of the stuff I've been doing recently are board games, and the thing about backing board games is that with board games, they're done. What they do Kickstarters for is to pay for materials. Video games are for starting and finishing it. And, you know, I haven't done many video games lately. I mean, actually, the last one I did, if I'm looking at my thing here right, is System Shock. And I know that's going to come. And that one I backed major big time. I backed that for $155 because I like System Shock. I love System Shock too. I never really got to, and it comes, and also a physical copy, which I want. You know, the big box collector's edition comes with the soundtrack, the Trioptimum Handbook, the Trioptimum Crew Pass, the Trioptimum Pin, a repair bot figurine, a steel DVD case with a game, a cyborg enforcer forum badge, a cyborg enforcer credit in the game, exclusive access to the developer forums. You will also receive digital collector's edition, exclusive access to the closed beta, digital copies of System Shock Enhanced and System Shock 2. And, oh, by the way, all those forum stuff I'm not going to use, and I'm also not going to do the beta because here's the thing. I only want to do the finished product, and I don't like spoiling things for myself.
Yeah, and I mean, my personal experience with Kickstarter – I actually backed a couple ones. I forgot about one. I actually have some custom action figures on my desk that I forgot that I backed. There are some good ones out there, and it's not like I don't trust them. Actually, some of them are friends of mine. Mm. It's just that at the time that they were doing their Kickstarter projects, I always forget about Kickstarter up until the last second.
Yeah. I did get one burned on one game, and that's the Mansion Lord, which was a fly-by-night Golgum Games, and they just did it and ran away. And I should have seen all of the warnings about that. I'm also waiting for comics writer script writing software for comic books. That was back in estimated delivery was February 2014. The funny thing is they still have a few updates, and I think it's one of those cases in which they're in over their heads and they're just doing it on their spare time now.
One that I wish I had backed is a good friend of mine, Kevin Cole, is working on this game called Hack, spelled HAQUE. Which is a grid-based roguelike RPG, straight-up CRT scanline style graphics. And everything about it seems charming as hell. And that guy, he's working his butt off. He, like, makes posts, I think, every 2 weeks or so about what he's doing with the game. And he's just really, really close and consistently vocal with his community, which I think is great for him. I hope it works out.
The other one that I backed that was never done was Son of Nor, The World is Your Weapon. But that was because of a sad thing, because of medical problems and all that stuff, and he simply could not finish. And he was very open about it. And a lot of the people in the comments said, you know what, I'm not. They offered a refund if they wanted. And a lot of us said, no. Just if you manage to complete it, just send it to us, you know. Just get better, and when you're better, you're better. And it's not like it was a fake, you know, like, oh, you know, it wasn't a scam. He really did get sick. Which was sad, because Son of Nora was a good idea, and it wasn't that overreaching. So. I think that's it, I guess. Oh, yeah. So, now the question of the week is, a lot of these games have been talking about what we've been, about the question of the week, and that is, what two games would you like to see combined? And no cheating, no games that actually exist. So, Scott, what two games would you love to see combined?
I would like to combine Sims 4, or no, sorry, Sims in general, and Skyrim or Elder Scroll, where I can customize my castle, create like a dynasty and stuff, and rule my kingdom with an iron fist, and that's what I want. I want the whole being able to make like a kingdom. And
did you ever play The Sims Medieval?
Yeah, I don't think you could custom make the buildings. You were doing like quests and stuff.
Okay, but you could customize a lot of things. The only thing you couldn't customize was the castle itself.
Yeah.
How about you, TJ? What two games would you like to combine?
You go ahead and go first. I'm still thinking about this.
Well, you know, I would like to see a combination of Fortnite and Roller Coaster Tycoon, in which you have to do everything in Fortnite, but also you have to make an amusement park that everybody's going to go to. So now you have creatures that are attacking the park, and you have to defend the park. And then in the daytime, people come to the park and go on the roller coaster, and you can also go on the roller coaster that you created as well.
I think if I was going to guess it, go with any one, I would say probably... I would like to see off the top of my head, I think of something like Terraria or or
Starbound.
There's another one. Starbound, that was one I was thinking about. Those games are fun for the building process, but I've always kind of hated the way they do their combat. I would actually like to see something like Dungeon Fighter Online was a side-scroller with a really, really decent side-scrolling beat-em-up combat system, and I would love to see sort of like maybe somebody put together something on the level of like a resource builder, a persistent world where that you travel around building bases and stuff, but maybe also put effort into like making a combat system that's like either like, I don't know, like Dungeon Fighter Online or any of the 2D Tales games. Those had some pretty good side-scrolling fights in them. Just something that would actually be riveting on both fronts instead of like good on one end and lackluster on the other.
You know, we were going to discuss Splatfest and how semen beat blood in that. And Whoa. don't tell me that I'm seeing things, because I'm not the only person who noticed that. And the first Splatoon had a lot of subtle sexual connotations to it too. But yeah, semen beat blood in Splatfest. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week, and hopefully the news will get better, because the summer is coming to a close. Well, not for a few weeks, but we're in the dead period right now, which is why there isn't that much news. I mean, I could have talked about the loot chest thing in Shadow of War, which a lot of people are upset about, but I'm not, because it seems like they're doing the same thing there that they do with Garden Warfare, in which it's very optional. It's just that whenever something like that happens, it's like people go up in arms automatically without ever even thinking about it. Like, oh, yeah, we could have talked about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and how people are complaining there, even though it's not going to hurt them, you know. And if anything, all the money that they make from the loot boxes go directly to charity.
Yeah.
Had you heard about this, TJ?
With PlayerUnknown on Battleground? Yeah. I follow that game a lot, and I like what they're doing with a lot of their stuff. Although, well, I won't get into the...
Well, you can get into it. Go ahead.
It's interesting how they're handling moderation and banning of players.
Well, that guy. Here's the thing. The guy kept on getting into the same Twitch feed constantly, and it's like, yeah, you're not even trying to hide the fact. And the guy who created the game, PlayerUnknown, said he saw the data, and yeah, he's guilty as hell. I mean,
right now, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds has a pretty stringent set of rules about whether you help or hinder other teammates. And from what I understand, regardless of that guy's circumstances, it is a non-discussion situation. And it's interesting to see, like, PlayerUnknown's Battleground and Friday the 13th, the game, are in a very similar situation right now as to having... These are just released games that are having some very interesting and unique problems of player moderation.
But you know, the thing is that at some point, you're going to have a line somewhere, you know?
Yeah, and with...
Bungie had that line with Halo, and it's like, they were very, you know, yeah, you cheated, get out.
Yeah, and with PUBG, it seems like that line is extremely super stringent, like what you just described with Bungie. And with Friday the 13th, it seems a little too loose, maybe, is the word for it. Well, but
you can't blame them when someone's doing criminal things. I mean, you know, that's like blaming the Democratic Party for not asking for help from Vladimir Putin. You know, it's like,
oh no, that guy deserves or whatever he's getting. I'm talking about the fact that with Friday the 13th, the game, it actually doesn't have a report system per se. You actually have to take a screenshot or a video and send it directly to an email to the developers, which is fine on PC, but really is kind of a hassle, like a long and completely unnecessary process for PS4 owners. It's a pain to do. It's basically a pain, if not nigh impossible, to do it on PS4 when somebody's cheating.
There's a lot of holes in PSN. I mean, anybody back a few years ago can attest to that.
It's not that. It's that there's really just it needs a report system that everybody can use, as opposed to one that just favors like going outside the game in an email to send it to the actual developer.
And the thing is, you know, if you don't have the structure, usually a few years down the line, it's a Wild West sort of thing, you know, in which hackers are roaming free and no one cares and there's no moderation whatsoever, you know.
Exactly. We just need some way of like marking a player and saying, this guy was doing this. Keep an eye on him.
Yeah. So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.